Welcome to the Varsity Sports Network LaxCast, presented by Cooper's Tavern. Cooper's is a classic American establishment with four locations in the Baltimore area, specializing in only the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce, along with an extensive beer and wine selection. Combining excellent service in a family-friendly atmosphere, Cooper's has become recognized as serving one of the must-try burgers across the country. We are here for our seventh installment to discuss high school lacrosse in the Maryland area. I'm Matt Kennedy, and I'm here once again alongside lacrosse greats Rick Brocato and Ron Klausner, and we're going to spend the next hour or so talking about our favorite topic, high school lacrosse. This week's special guest is former great high school and college player Brendan Kelly. Now let's get into it with our O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald Hot Seat segment. As a locally owned and managed firm, O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald is committed to knowing each and every client they serve. This is a genuinely Baltimore mindset, born of a genuinely Baltimore legacy and established by two thoroughly Baltimore guys, Tom Mooney and Sean O'Connor. It is enhanced now by the blending of their company with another well-established, independent, and locally owned firm, Chase Fitzgerald and Company. O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald Realtors, a name you know, a team you can trust, and they like to say when their sign is on the lawn, their name is on the line. So visit www.oconnorhomes.com for more information. And today our hot seat topic is going to be dynasties through the decades, high school lacrosse dynasties. And Brock, I'm looking at you because you're going to start this one off. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say to start it off.
Boy, this is definitely a hot seat topic, Mac. So there are three dynasties that come to mind for me.
I bet I know one
being
of them,
in this
but go
area,
ahead.
Being in this area for so long. And then, of course, spending so much of my time here at St. Paul's. But the first one has to be Haldy Meyer's teams of the 1940s here. Didn't lose in 5 years, won seven championships, one of the longest winning streaks in the country in high school lacrosse. So those teams of the 40s with George Mitchell and Billy Hooper were just outstanding teams. The next group is a program that I'm very familiar with too, that I grew up riding my bike across York Road to watch all the time, and those were the Towson High teams of the 60s and even mid 70s. You know, I watched Coach Bear Thomas on the sideline when you know, I think it was 13 or 14 straight Baltimore County championships, and grew up watching Jack Thomas play. And you know, that was really a group that kind of started my love of the game of lacrosse. There's no doubt about it. And then finally, you know, as a coach in this league, the final group has to be the Loyola teams of the 80s, led by Joe McFadden. It's unheard of today in the MSA or the MIAA to have the success that they had. I think six championships in the 80s, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mac, nine championship games.
I think they were in eight championship games.
Yeah, just unbelievable. Yeah, and the talent pool and what they were pumping out. But, you know, they really developed a great dynasty and a kind of a legacy moving forward. And those guys all contributed at the college level. And largely that was to Joe and John Hawes that were coaching those guys. John Stewart, who was still helping out at the time, just put together quite a run there.
Is it impossible for that to happen again, you think?
I don't see that happening again in this league. I really don't. I think the parity's just too great right now. And, you know, we haven't seen back-to-back winners in a long time, with St. Paul's 91-92. What was it, Gilman 94-95?
The last repeat winners are Loyola with Steele.
And Loyola 2008-2009, right? Or was it 7-8?
Yeah,
so,
7-8,
you know, those are, it just doesn't happen. And you know, hey, it might happen with Calvert Hall this year, but, you know, hey, it's tough. And Calvert Hall, I think, is feeling that heat right now, you know, when you're up top. Everybody's bringing their A game. It's everybody's Super Bowl for you. So, you know, those were all programs. Those three programs I really felt like have withstood that you know, that piece, that pressure.
Well, I think
being
the game is
top.
A lot different nowadays.
It is.
It makes it, you know, you say parity, but the growth of the sport and the amount of players, the quality players that are around, just almost make it impossible for that to happen. We're talking about, is there going to be a repeat? You know, even something like, you know, a three-peat.
Right.
My God, you know, six in a row, you know, that is, that's unbelievable.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And coming down from New York, that was the team that I looked at as being one of the great ones. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was right around the corner from where I went to school. We used to go to some of the games as a kid. You know, I remember going to either Loyola games or going to Delaney games. That was it. You know, we have our guest here today, you know, Brendan Kelly. I remember the first public school game I went to, I watched him play. And that was, you know, it's to actually compare those eras, even something like we think that era is, you know, just it's close to what it is now, 20, 30 years ago. The game has changed to the point where I'm telling you, it's very, very difficult. Two or three-peat is almost impossible.
Well, Brock, just a couple of weeks ago, I don't think anyone in this room thought Calvert Hall was going to lose.
Right.
A game.
I know.
And, you know,
me being one of them.
Me being another.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they lose to Boys Latin, and they barely beat
St.
Joe yesterday.
Yeah.
So. You talk about your parity.
Well, we
Mount
also
St.
took
Joe.
BL, too. You know, BL's been on, you know, 3 out of 4, I think, they've lost. It's a strong league, and you're going to see this consistently, and you're going to see it more often as we move, consistently move forward, because one of the main things is, again, kids are going to want to play.
Mm-hmm.
And no matter what, if they're going to a Calvert Hall or they're going to a Boys Latin and they don't have an opportunity to play, they're going to go elsewhere. And that makes other teams stronger. That makes the Mount St. Joe's and the Spaldings, you know, rise up from not being, it's not an easy game anymore,
yeah.
You know?
I think that here's something that's kind of cool. You know, from 2010, you're a great team that won the title. From that year, here are the following winners: Gilman, Calvert Hall, Loyola, Boys Latin, St. Mary's, McDonough, Calvert Hall. So you have one team that has repeated once, and that's in a 7-year period. You know, back in the day, after, of course, the St. Paul's, you know, dynasty with Howdy Myers, Gilman won it for 4 years in a row with George Chanley.
Right.
Then St. Paul says, hey, wait a minute. And they come back, and they win up, you know, 3 or 4 straight in a row. So I think those two teams dominated the game for, you know, 30 years, give or take.
Well, I also think, you know, you look at it, we're just counting championships, right, too? You know, you look over the course of Bob Shriver's 36-year career and how many championship games he was in as a head coach, and was successful winning 6, yeah. But probably in another 10 to 12.
Yeah.
You know, that's a part of being a dynasty as well. So Bob really did a terrific job with that program and the consistency. And I think when I was coaching with him at one point, Steve Dubin said he likened it to Syracuse's run of Final Fours, that at one point Boys Latin had a run of 21 straight Final Fours in our league.
That's
pretty
big.
Special.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, here's something that, you know, Boys Latin, you know, we're known for lacrosse at Boys Latin, obviously. They've never won back-to-back titles in 90 years. You know, if you ask somebody that, they'd say, yeah. Oh, BL, you know, dominated in this. Well, they may have been there, but I like banners. I like to put the banners on the walls.
Look, they've had some over the past, like, you know, 15, 20 years. I mean, those teams we talked about, I think it was 97 with the Glatzels,
right.
How they did not win two. You know, Shaq with his team and, you know, Tal Bruno and Hunter Moreland, that group, which is only 4 years ago,
right.
How they only won one. I know they lost it, I think, in the finals the year, their junior year.
Yes.
And they were out to capture it their senior year.
How beat us in the final in 2014.
Yeah.
Right.
They went 37-1 and won one title.
Yeah.
You know, and as a Boys Latin, in 63 to 66, we went 44-4 against high school competition and won 2 titles. You know, back then, there was one playoff game.
Right.
You know,
that was it.
The two finalists in the final game, and you had to get there or you went home.
And you look at Randy Dace, what he accomplished at Towson, you know, winning four state championships in the 80s and then four more in the 90s. I think he could make a pretty strong case
no question
of being in a dynasty as well. And, you know, his counterpart, Gary Schreiber, won championships in between the years that Towson won championships. So,
right.
You know, it's tough. It's tough to do it year in and year out like St. Paul's did, like Loyola did. You know, it really is.
Okay, well, there you have it. They're the decade, the dynasty through the decades. So that was today's topic for the O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald Hot Seat segment. Visit www.oconnorhomes.com for more information. Now it's time for our True Players to Watch segment. Since 2004, True has designed, engineered, and manufactured lacrosse handles for the most respected brands in the game. And now they're building them exclusively for their brand, True. They build them in their own manufacturing facilities with engineers, designers, and material specialists dedicated to improving your lacrosse performance. True is where lacrosse meets science. Visit www.truetothegame.com for more information. And we're going to start this time with Ron for some players to watch. I know he has some thoughts. He's got another long list there in front of him.
Absolutely. You know, and again, each week it keeps getting better and better, and new kids are stepping to the forefront, and it's very, very exciting. I'm going to start actually right now. I'm going to go in the city, Baltimore City. Big game yesterday with Mervo and City.
Oh, I saw that in the Sun. That was great.
And, you know, right now, and you're talking about two freshmen, Taquan Busby. He had 2 goals, 3 assists against City. Big victory. Puts Mervo as the sole leader in the City Conference. I do believe they're 5-0 right now in conference play. With City, a kid that I know extremely well, DeAndre Chaney, he had 2 goals in that game against Mervo. The game before against Poly in their City-Poly rivalry, he had 6 goals as a freshman.
He's a freshman.
So he's a freshman. And he actually, I've coached him since he's been 6 years old. Wonderful kid, you know, great family, very close to my family, and he's really helping the City program out tremendously right now. And it was great to see that he's getting recognized a little bit. The big game of the day yesterday, Severn, BL, Dylan Gerger, hopefully I'm pronouncing some of these names right, 3 goals, 3 assists in that game. Mm-hmm. They won in a game 8-7 to be part of 75% of the scoring is quite impressive. You know, Jacob Giroux was 12 of 18 from the X. Obviously, keeping the possessions are extremely important to stop runs and obviously, you know, create offense. And Cooper Emmons had 12 saves in the game.
Yep.
So that was a huge team win. And a lot of boys stepped up in that game for Severn. So, you know, it's actually off the cuff. I always would love to actually see both of those teams play, the maroon and white. Mm-hmm. You know, I never know when I pull
it's
up.
It's very confusing.
Who's who.
When they play Towson as well, those teams.
I also had a, you know, Mount St. Joe's got a kid, Kyle D. Crispino, 5 goals and assist in a loss against Calvert Hall, but he was someone that really, you know, was talked about in, you know, by the coaches as really being a player that was difficult to stop and really stepped up and was the player that shined in that game. I always talk about the offensive guys. I'm going to give a shout-out to a defensive kid. Andrew Florenzo, who's a defenseman from Loyola, really did a great job in the boys' Latin game again with Loyola. I remember them talking about how he really wanted the duty to cover Brendan Grimes. They didn't give it to him right away, and then during the game they made a switch. Seems like he was the driving force for that defense to hold up and really stymie boys Latin. So again, a lot of really, really nice players we haven't talked about.
Right.
You know, we have the normal guys we've talked about, but these are guys, at least on my list, that I really thought stepped up this week and deserved a little shout out.
Yeah, that man, that boy, DeCrispino, he plays a lot like his coach with the energy level that Steven Berger plays. Not as skilled as Steve was, that's for sure. Has a ways to go, but he's still developing. But he has bought in and fed off of his coach's energy level. Coaching against him last year, he was very successful against us. And, you know, 5 goals against Calvert Hall's defense, that's a big day. Really,
that's
a big day.
Yeah, and speaking of Calvert Hall, I watched the Boys Latin Calvert Hall game, and the twins, the Mitchell twins, I think their name is, yep. It's Grant and Connor. Big, strong kids, man. I think they're both
from Ohio, aren't they?
I think they're originally from Georgia.
And oh, is that where they are?
Ohio
State. My bad. Yeah.
And then with
they're
Cole
going to Ohio.
Grant's got a hell of a. He really has a.
One's
hell of
a lefty,
shot.
And one's a righty. Yeah. And with Cole Herbert, that is a sort of a Skip Lickfist-esque midfield. Just yeah. These big, huge guys
yeah.
that are intimidating.
So did Cole
they
move? I know Cole.
I think they bumped Cole
they
over
back
to the
up.
Back
it's
to
where
the
he's
midfield.
Probably
yeah.
best. Yeah. But they had him playing attack in the yeah. beginning of the year.
And I'm baffled. I can't figure this league out anymore. You know, I have no idea how. And these guys are fantastic players.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're getting off good shots. They're just not going in. And these guys are going to be there, I think, at the end. That midfield is too darn good.
If they can pull it all together and play like a team and, you know, take good quality shots, I do think Calvert Hall still has all the makings of a championship caliber team again.
And remember, they have Jacob Kelly, who's a very, very unique.
Who was banged up yesterday.
He was out yesterday. But, you know, you talk about a player, he is, you know, he can shoot, he can dodge, he's good on ground balls, he's not very big, but... I guess you don't have to be big if you're as talented as he is.
That's right. You know, Elmer Wingate told me when I played for the Dumbarton Juniors back in 1974, he said, you know, you always used to call me Little Brock because I was the smallest in the family. He said, you don't have to be an Amazon to play this sport.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So
I
work on your stick work, work on all the other little fundamental things, and you'll find playing time.
Well, I remember just a quick one, my senior year playing against Loyola, and I had to cover Mike Ruland, who was a first-team All-American in 1989.
From St. Mary's.
From Mike St. Mary's High School. Yeah. Mike was on platform shoes, was 5'3". So he was, and he
and
was,
that
you
was
know,
the look, era of platform shoes.
Yes, it was the era with the goldfish right in the heels.
Got it, man.
And listen, he was a tough cover because he was quick, he was fast. But at 5'3", and I'm 6'4", 6'4 and a half, that was very, very difficult. So, yeah, the small guys sometimes get it done.
That's right.
You know, and I think we're all guilty. I wish I need to do it more. The guys that do the dirty work that don't get their name in the paper with scoring goals or assists. And the 2014 team at BL had a kid named Nick Giswaldi. He didn't score. But
great
ball,
football player.
A great football player. He's up at Cornell now as a safety and has a chance. You know, he's really good. Mm-hmm. But anyway, when that ball was on the carpet, he came up with it every time, you know. And nowhere is that stat kept in the paper. It's who scored 5 goals and who had 3 assists. But you know, you can't win without those guys.
You need those guys. You know, our 2010 team, I point to the difference maker, the game changer for us was Gordy Long, defensive midfielder, went on to play at St. Mary's College, a small school here. But without Gordy, we don't win the championship.
Right. You don't get the ball.
No doubt about it.
You can't score without the ball.
Yep.
So you need these
guys. You need those guys. You know, nobody's – I think the best-kept secret in town right now, too, is out of the A conference, is Friends School. And what they're doing, 11-1 right now.
That's
you
great.
Know, we talked about a couple of their players.
Two freshmen starting on attack.
Yep, but Patrick Linehan, a senior, just had 5 goals and a big win the other day, and then 2 goalies, Ross Blumenthal and. Dawson Bordick, Mike Bordick's son, both seniors splitting time in the cage, doing a tremendous job. Watch out for Friends. I mean, it's great to see that program rise back, and I'd love to see them win the B this year.
Did they play any A-conference teams this year? I don't know their schedule. But
I don't think they did.
I don't think they did.
They beat Towson. I know that. They went over to Towson and beat Towson High. And that,
it was 11-10.
Yeah, and a great game.
But once again, we have Brendan Kelly in the room with us. And Brendan, who was the guy, who was the down and dirty guy on your teams, or do you remember that guy that when the ball's on the ground, you probably played in mud and grass, obviously.
We did.
He got the ball.
Yeah, we had several. You know, our senior year was a guy named John Harold, who was a face-off specialist who was on and off the field, mainly a soccer guy, but, you know, was a guy that is an unsung hero. I don't know the stats in the championship game, but we scored 12 goals plus, an opening face-off in each quarter, each half. You know, he was probably, 15-2 that day. So, you know, you guys know. I mean, possession is everything in today's game. It's incredible. So
it's difficult to win. I mean, I've seen a couple of games. You know, we looked at Albany losing to UMBC, and they won 19 out of 21 faceoffs. I remember my alma mater, Towson, lost 20 out of 22 against Denver the first round of the playoffs 2 years ago. And they still won that game. So it is; those are rare occurrences. So if you have the ball, you stop runs. If you have the ball, you're taking time off the clock, and you make teams desperate when they're trying to chase after you, which spreads the field, which creates opportunity.
Brock, are we losing those guys? Are we not developing that kind of player? I mean, obviously everybody wants to score. Everybody wants to get the assist. Are we developing those guys anymore, those down and dirty guys that get the ball?
Yeah, I absolutely think coaches are still finding a lot of value in those kids and are really working on them. The issue is now, you know, everybody wants to get that college scholarship, wants to get their name in the paper. You know, it's convincing those kids to embrace their role. And that's a coach's job, you know, that to get those kids to understand, hey, we can't do this without the little things that you do. And it's okay to do those little things. It may not show up in the scorebook, but those hockey assists, those big ground balls, those big face-offs, you know, those are things that win championships.
And you know who knows the most important person out on the field, which is your coach. You know, they know the guys who are doing that are making those kind of plays because they're the ones that are giving them the opportunity to win. So.
All right. Well, there you have this week's Players to Watch, brought to you by True. Visit www.truetothegame.com for more information. Now let's go to the Cooper's Tavern Coach's Corner segment. Once again, Cooper's is a classic American establishment specializing in only the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce, along with an extensive beer and wine selection. If you like beer and wine, Cooper's is really the place to go. Cooper's combines excellent service in a family-friendly atmosphere. And this week's topic at the Coach's Corner segment is going to be face-offs. I have my opinions. I'll start it off with Brock. Give me yours.
Well, I think Brendan hit it on the head. You know, you have to have the ball now, and it's so important for your team to gain possession and maintain possession. And boy, if you can do that consistently and turn it into a make it take it game, you're going to put yourself in a position to win an awful lot of games, you know. And I love seeing the teams, though, that have not just one face-off guy, but that do it with a tandem of guys. It's such a grueling position now and so taxing on the body that it really worries me when I see a team with just one guy. You know, that they rely on game in and game out. And, you know, no matter what, I think coaches have to do a better job of finding those guys, developing those guys, and utilizing them rather than just sticking with the one stud all the time. You know, I look at Johns Hopkins and I think about Hunter Moreland and what he has given that program over the years. I mean, he sacrificed his body. That poor kid couldn't even come off the run off the field last year, but he was out there all the time. And this year, as I watched him, he looked about as sharp as I've seen him since high school.
I think this is the healthiest he's been in a while.
But he's taken a lot of face-offs, and there are times when I feel like, hey, shut him down and let's develop another guy, because you never know what's going to happen, right? You got to have that second guy that's ready to go
there.
But
what if you don't have, you know, what does Denver do with a Trevor Baptiste? I know we're going into college now, but he might be the best in the business. You want the ball every time.
I hear you.
You're not going to put him
them out there?
Well, I also think that having a Trevor Baptiste could be counterproductive for your team, because if he goes down, if I'm a young player and I look at him and he's a sophomore on the team, mm-hmm. do I want to go to school at Denver? Though I would love to maybe go play for Coach Tierney, love that opportunity, but I know I'm going to be sitting for a few years. That's probably been counterproductive as far as bringing in mm-hmm. that extra talent on the backside. And that, you know, I'm not saying that it is. I'm just saying. It seems like that's what would happen.
And there are times, too, in a game where you can give a kid a rest. You can give him a break. Yeah. Denver's not in all these one-goal games. They're winning some games going away. Yeah. They could throw another kid out there and develop him and have Trevor help to develop him. Yep. You know, no doubt he's the beast. When the game's on the line, you go with your guy.
Yeah. But I'm gonna ask Brendan a question with Coach Zim last week. Said that we talked about polls and how mm-hmm. many, and he believed in going back to three. And he also said he was disappointed and wished we could get back to two-way middies, guys who could go offense and defense. He never said just get away from the Fogo, but he wanted guys that could play the all-around game. So what are your thoughts on that? You played back in the day at some great programs.
Yeah, so, I mean, I had a chance to play both ways at both in high school and in college. And to hit on the face-off piece, like today, the high school lacrosse that I've watched, you know, recently, you brought up the wing play. There's so much pinch and pop today. You know, you pinch and pop to yourself. If there was a way, I love the new rules in both high school and college. If there was a way to kind of facilitate that you couldn't do the pinch and pop, that you'd actually have to create a loose ball situation, those create some of the most exciting moments in the game. But the two-way guys, I mean, I've seen a couple of games. There's a young man that I saw play. He's at McDonough, number one. He's African-American young man.
Oh,
man, what a stud that kid was. I saw him play.
He plays with the pole and he plays with the
Again, you talk about one of these guys, these unsung hero kids who just do everything both between the lines. He's a close defenseman some points. But, you know, the two-way athlete, at least in the college game, I don't know of too many. There's some great short stick defenders out there. The kid 34 from Ohio State comes to mind. I don't know some of these guys' names, but there are some that I noticed. But in terms of just that pure face-off play, I struggle right now as a spectator to say, should it be, you know, just should they change the rule, not give a face-off, or if I don't know what the right answer is.
I love that. Yeah. The old school laser or sweep and then create the 50-50 ground ball.
That's actually what's hurt a little bit of the two-way middie, because, you know, I think that once it went on the ground, it made for a lot of change. Mm-hmm. But once they actually started narrowing the stick and created that pinch and pop, which again was created by, I do believe, Alex Smith. Mm-hmm. That's in the late 90s or turn of the century. And, mm-hmm. you know, the game changed ever since that actually happened. It really did. And
Coach Zim, I think, had a great point last week. When you put the pole on the wing, the coaches are automatically going into a defensive mindset. Mm. And what we want is more offense. You know, that's kind of the reason why, it's in favor of the offensive
players. That's what the fans want.
Today, you know, you guys have seen, we've all seen the skill of a long stick defender today is, you know, you would know. I mean, in terms of stick skills, you guys had it. There were few and far between that could actually play offense with a long stick. But today, there are more than several. And, you know, the way they shoot and all that, the technology's allowed that. I want to go back to what you said, like beat the ball on the ground. When we played lacrosse, the takeaway check was beautiful. It was fantastic, and it created unsettled situations, which created excitement. You could just hear the crowd. Not only they're excited for the takeaway check, but they're excited because all of a sudden there's a loose ball. If the defensive team picks it up, they know it's going to be this beautiful play, long passes, all those things that are just still beautiful about our game.
But I think it helped also glorify the defensive position.
And I think you go back to technology there. The only way to throw a takeaway check is throwing a violent check, and then you're going to get flagged
for it
now,
Rick.
Right?
Amen. Yep.
Yeah, well, I remember back in the day, and I'm older than you guys, but we practiced the fast break over mm-hmm. and over and over again. Now if a wing guy or a pole guy has the ball, unless you're, you know, BJ or Michael Ubriaco at Boys Latin or a few of them, it's don't go, don't do the unsettled situation. Yep. Get the ball to an attackman, and then we're going to slow it down.
And do the dance, get your guys in.
Get your guys in.
Yep.
Boy, the best part of the game was the fast break. Boom, boom, bam.
I still struggle with the most used part of the field is the corner of the restraining boxes. On the game today, and I look at that as a spectator still going, why are we running towards the corner of the box, the top corner of each box, and it's simply to
we
used to be just let's get, there was get, it wasn't a gentleman's role, it was we're going to the goal, go
take
the
it goal. And sweep get to the rack. Yeah,
sure,
I agree.
Absolutely I have a question, and I have no idea the answer. Why is our faceoffs right-handed? Why are they always right-handed? In girls lacrosse,
that's
I believe they're always left-handed because you're between your goalie and the ball. Why are they always right-handed?
That's a great question. Because you see a lot of kids right now that are lefties that are forced to face off right-handed and then switch hands and scoop the ball up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see switch that over. Switch it every one so that you don't have a Trevor Baptiste who can literally – he's a great player. But when a guy like that takes over a game, I think it takes away from the enjoyment of the game. When you know he's going to get every face-off, and it's 12-3, and he gets every face-off, it's not fun to watch.
Well, make it, take it.
The other thing, too, is that with the guys where they line up, how quick they can get with the ball the way it used to be, the scrum time was greater.
Oh.
So it allowed the wing play to always be involved.
Correct.
There weren't a ton of – there were fast breaks – but now, because that ball can be placed right, can actually almost grab it, put it in your stick, and carry it, you're running down the field, and you're actually the wing play doesn't even come into play.
I asked you last week, how many goals did you score? And you knew all the shots. You talk. I mean, I don't think the defensemen today have that mindset, and that takes away from the game, I think. So. All right, well, there you have this week's Coach's Corner segment on Faceoffs, once again brought to you by Cooper's Tavern. So visit Cooper's often for the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce. And again, they have a great beer and wine selection, so check out Cooper's. Now it's time for the McKenzie Commercial Real Estate Royalty and Rivals segment. Each company within the McKenzie family was born from their commitment to serve a client's needs. Starting with McKenzie Management Company and through to their latest edition, Data Story, McKenzie has extended its service line to help its clients meet their real estate objectives. To be truly innovative is to be in touch and committed. With McKenzie, it's personal. So visit www.mckenziecommercial.com to learn more. And this week, we're going to sort of a little added twist to it. We're going to do our Royalty and Rivals on Anne Arundel County teams against sort of the Baltimore metro area teams. And I know, Brock, you have some thoughts on that. You're a Towson guy. Did you play South River and Severna Park and all those teams? And
yeah, the North versus the South all over again. And so when I was at Towson in 79, we played as a sophomore. We went to the state championship and played Severna Park in an epic game down in Severna Park and lost the state championship 19-17.
Ouch.
Had to be escorted out by the state police because it got a little heated at the end of the game. It was pretty intense.
Well, question, before you even go on, how do they even have home field advantage?
That's the way we used to do it back then.
Was that the start of the neutral site because you had to be escorted out? The state didn't want to pay for that money anymore.
No, it was one of those things where they felt like whoever was the higher ranked team, if I'm not mistaken, that year we had one loss going into that game and Severna Park was undefeated.
That's still not
so fair. They got the call that, that we were going to travel down there. But listen, hey, Anne Arundel County, those boys have been traveling in buses and girls have been traveling in buses up here forever. Sometimes they have to make 4, 5, 6 trips up here depending on what league they're in.
Right.
Yesterday in the MIAA you had 3 games that pitted northern teams versus southern teams, and guess what? The Anne Arundel County boys came out on top in 2 of them yesterday. So, I think Brendan can talk about too when he was at Towson, some of the championship games that he was in when he played against the Anne Arundel County. It always seemed like it ended up that way at some some point, you know?
Yeah, it was interesting because, you know, we always kept an eye on that. Going back to your days, Rick, from, you know, your time against Severna Park, growing up, we always tracked, like, who would Towson play in the state championship game or who would Delaney play? And we had, you know, we played these South River teams.
Right.
We played Andover, and they were heated battles. You know, they were really good and, you know, had great fan following. It was excellent.
I think it's interesting in the MIA, and I'll switch gears a little bit. I think it's a huge disadvantage for the Anne Arundel County teams, especially the, you know, Spalding's been in for 12 years in the A Conference, give or take. But, you know, Severn's been in since basically the 20s in the A Conference, MSA, now MIA. They haven't won a title since 68. And, you know, they've been there.
Chooch Turner, senior year.
And they rock and roll. They round the table that year. Chooch was the Kelly Award winner.
And they've had some great teams.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, as we've been talking, Brendan, they got to get on a bus and play five teams in this area every year when teams up here only have to do it once or twice.
Yeah.
And I've always admired that St. Mary's 96 team because they ran the table. And did you coach? Were you in Denver at the time?
No, I was at St. Paul's, and we played against them in the championship. That was a team that had 24 Division I players on
their
squad.
They ran the table.
24. They went 16-0.
16-0.
Mm-hmm. Beat us in the final 13-11.
So I don't know who they played that year on the road, but it was probably, you know, either McDonough or Boys Latin, Calvert Hall, Loyola, St. Paul's. They got to get on a bus. You know what it's like getting on a bus. Down to Andover. It's not easy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And where's the championship game? At Johns Hopkins. Yes, they got to come up here.
Exactly,
right?
Yep.
Now it's in Towson. They're coming up here again.
And when you're trying to get 18-year-old kids to, you know, concentrate on the game when they're on the bus, they're in the back of the bus. And, you know, I'm not sure what they're thinking, but it's hard to motivate them, but they've been on a bus for 45 minutes.
Oh, it's
those,
the toughest
those school
thing.
Buses aren't comfortable.
They're
as
not
well.
Comfortable.
Those cheese buses aren't, Ron.
They're not right. When you're 6'4", trying to move around, your knees are banging up front.
Yeah, it's a little better when you're 5'8". Stuffy legs.
You know, I will tell you, we Bucky Sheritz, who is went to Towson High, he drove us down to watch, and I don't know what year Boobs and Woody, Craig Boubier and Brian Wood.
81.
And there were several other guys on that team from St. Mary's.
Yeah.
We drove down to see those guys because we heard, you know, how good they were. And the next year was Brian Wood and Craig Boubier's senior year. They actually traveled up to Towson High to scrimmage.
So that would have been 82.
So they came up
down
for scrimmage.
There in 81. Randy took us down there, and I'm thinking, why are you taking us to play these guys?
Yes.
You know,
we got
off the bus, and it was 6-0 before we hit the sideline. Yeah.
Weren't they the number one team 3 years in a row?
They were
and
the number
like
one.
Like 80, 81, 82.
You
know, look, with just Boobs and Woody, I mean, that was those guys could eat you alive.
Oh, and they had a face-off kid, Lee Donaldson, that was a two-way middie.
Yes. Yeah.
He would stay in when he won face-offs and play offense. You know, he was dynamite.
When you put them back in the, you know, you throw them in the college ranks, and then you added a guy like Mike Morrill to that group. It was almost like they were unstoppable. And that group, I do believe, won 3 out of 4 years.
They won
NCAA titles. Mm-hmm. So that's quite impressive for a group. And so to see those guys also... you know, we had Coach Zim on talking about, you know, how those guys played. I can imagine how they played in high school because they probably were extremely exciting because they weren't reeled in yet. And
I'm trying to remember. I think 79, I think Severna Park was the Baltimore Sun number one team.
Number one team in 79. They went undefeated.
They
beat us in the final and were undefeated. And they had some great – Chuck Jones was on that team. They had some really good ball players on that squad.
The guy – so Brian Wood, the closest – player that I've ever seen play like him is Connor Fields. And I mean that. You know, Brian Wood may not have like that lightning quickness in terms of quick change of direction on a roll dodge, but his shiftiness going left to right laterally, setting a defender up by just opening a hip and then, you know, going the opposite direction, Brian Wood was a special player, and you nailed it. In high school, he was a lot more freewheeling. I don't know how many shots he had coming from, you know, he would be dodging around the goal line extended for his left hand, had this stick in his right hand and would flick it over his right shoulder for goals. And Barney Ahern is in the goal going, oh my gosh, I've never seen anything like this. You know, we talked about that after the
and
game.
And you guys are yelling, Barney, you got to save that. Come on, buddy.
Exactly. Well, we had get on that pipe. 81, and I'll never forget, we called a timeout. It was like 4-0 right away, and Woody had 3 out of their 4, and he let one rip. It seemed like from outside of the restraining line. And we called, Randy called a timeout. Coach Days called a timeout, got us all in the huddle, and he's like, our goalie was Mike Cowan, who was a heck of a goalie, big lefty, had made all Metro that year. And he's like, Mike, what are you seeing? He goes, Coach, I'm not seeing anything. That ball just exploded by my eyes.
We watched some highlight tapes the other day of it would have been 1987, played in the Carrier Dome, and Brian Wood, no lie, shot from 1 yard inside the restraining line, righty, you know, like low to high, and just stung the corner on. I forget who the goalie was, but man, what an it was.
Jimmy
just
Guiry, probably.
No, man, it was it wasn't Matt Palem. It was the guy right before Matty P. So
great rivalries. Yeah, and to get back to it too, you know, we as a coach, you got to get your team fired up to get on that bus and get down there and play. And maybe you're going to play too on a Friday night. And Anne Arundel County comes alive on a Friday night. It's a happening place. And the parking lot's packed, and, you know, they're selling hot dogs. They're fired up to see this Baltimore Northern team come in there. And you better get your team ready to play.
And,
because both
areas complain of home cooking when it comes to the refereeing. You know, Baltimore fans have been complaining about Anne Arundel County refs, and when they come up here, they claim the same thing. So I'm sure there might be something to it. Probably not.
I think that's
not
a natural process of when we used to go to Philly, and the Philly refs are home cooking, and you go to Long Island and it's home cooking, and it's home cooking anywhere, you know.
I got one bench penalty in over 20 years, and it was
at St. Mary's game. Was it at night?
It was at St. Mary's at night. Absolutely. Yeah. So, you know,
that's great.
I think it was tough playing down there.
Yeah. I think what that St. Mary's team did in from 80, 81, 82, and I hope they're the 3 years that they won it.
83.
I think they won three.
Jim Moorhead, a Towson High guy.
Generals.
How's this? You know what Moorhead's first year was 1980. That's Shriver's first year at Boys Latin.
Legends. Those two guys were legends. And Coach Dace and Coach Moorhead were best of friends growing up.
I think they were in each other's wedding, if I'm not mistaken, those two guys. So, anything else? I think we've exhausted this topic. So there you have the Royalty and Rivals segment this week. Once again, it's the Anne Arundel teams versus the Baltimore area teams. Brought to you by McKenzie Commercial Real Estate. With McKenzie, remember, it's personal, so visit www.mckenziecommercial.com to learn more. Now it's time for the Kelly & Associates Insurance Group and Kelly Payroll Heyday segment, brought to you by Kelly & Associates and Insurance Group. Kelly is pleased to support VarsitySportsNetwork.com. Kelly & Associates helps employees and employers save time, money, and hassle in investigating the intricacies of insurance, benefits, payroll, and workforce challenges. Visit www.kellyway.com to put their people, technology, and services to work for you. Once again, our Heyday segment, we're going to talk for about 10, 15 minutes with Brendan Kelly, big star at Towson High School, and then finished his college career at Johns Hopkins. Did you play club?
I did play club. Right,
we'll get
Mount Washington.
Mount Washington, and you know, Team Toyota, and then Chesapeake.
Well, the circuit. You did the rotation.
A little bit.
That's good.
Had a little interruption.
Looking you up, there was a lot of hits on your name. And I didn't realize. I forgot that you were the Player of the Year for the Baltimore Sun in '85. I'm going to embarrass the heck out of you. And I think the year before, All Metro in the Baltimore News American and in the Baltimore Sun. So not a bad high school career. And then, of course, at Hopkins, 1 year you were second team All American. And I think another year you were an honorable mention All American. And, of course, the best probably is that you were on that 87 team.
Absolutely.
Is there anything better than a championship?
I in lacrosse, no way. Yeah, I couldn't think of it. Other than maybe playing for your country, you know, which, you know, never happened for me. But winning the championship in 87 was remarkable for a lot of reasons. It was a special year. There was a lot of, I guess, extra motivating factors with Coach Smith being sick.
Yes.
And the legend that he was. And, yeah, so it was really special.
Well, also on the Hopkins site, you won the George Penniman Trophy as the outstanding mid-year senior. And I went, Brock, you'll love this. I went through some of the, this is the company that Brendan's in with. So tell me if you recognize any of these names. Ace Adams, Dick Tucker, Al Seivel, Jerry Schneidman, Charlie Goodell, Rick Kowalczyk, Dale Kohler,
legends.
Dave Huntley, Del Dressel, Kyle Harrison, and Paul Rabel. You're in that company. Not bad.
And he should be.
Not bad.
And he should be.
They're just some of the winners.
No doubt about it.
Through the years.
Should be. You know, I had, right out of college, I went and coached with Randy and did some scouting and warmed up his goalies and things like that. And it was Butch's senior year. And I had heard about Brendan from Randy and from, following Towson High lacrosse. But watching him play was really, really awesome. And, you talk about what great players do. Well, they make people around them better. They elevate everybody's game. Brendan was certainly, if not the top, he was one of the top players in the state in 85 and deserved that award to be player of the year. There's no doubt about it. But his excitement for the game and the energy that he brought out even to practices on a day in and day out level, knowing that maybe, this game we're playing Lansdowne, but he still approached it the same way. And I think that becomes contagious, infectious among a team. And that team really did, I think, thrive on Brendan's energy that year that he brought in. You know, Coach Dace has made it very clear. He said, if there's a blueprint for a Towson High lacrosse player, it's Brendan Kelly, 85. That's pretty cool.
When I asked Coach Dace back when we were coaching basketball together, I said, who are some of your players? And he said, I don't like to say that. And then he said your name. So my next question, you played for Dace, you played for Zim.
Yep.
You played for some great coaches.
Oh, they were two of the best. I mean, by X's and O's, literally, arguably two of the best that have ever coached our sport, for sure. I look back to Coach Zim the year that we won in 87. He had this thing called the J Team. I don't know if you guys know that.
Yes.
He literally would substitute the entire offensive unit, put another team out there that would literally run helter skelter until he found a good matchup and would exploit that, and we scored several goals in the semifinal game against Maryland in the 87 run. And Randy, as we talked about earlier, we played in the state championship game my senior year, and he scouted teams to the nth degree, and he was all about the details. Preemptively he does that stick check before we go onto the field against Andover, and I know it had an effect psychologically at a minimum to the coaches. Mm-hmm. So the players probably didn't really care much, but the coaches probably thought they would have this edge. Two of the best, and it was remarkable.
I also found something. I think this would have been cool for me. So this was the headline: Kelly Brothers lead Towson in romp. 20-5. What was it like playing with your brother? That must have been a lot of fun.
That was great. And there were so many little, you get close friends, right? You play with your brother, and there's some headlines like that, and you get
ribbed. Was that Tommy or Brian?
It was Tommy. It was Tommy.
Tommy in 82, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
82,
yeah. This is 84, actually. But you scored 5 goals in this game, and your brother had 4-2, I think, or something. So not a bad day for the
Tommy
family.
Was a terrific player, too. Yeah. TK could really play. I think he scored the winning goal in the 82 delay. Any game
in
right
overtime,
in the overtime, the whole team piled on him, and he broke his collarbone or separated his shoulder, couldn't play the rest of the year.
And it was prom night, so he was bummed.
Never heard that story.
That's a classic talking to TK about
top 10
that.
Story of all time. That's fantastic.
But just all three of the brothers were terrific players, terrific human beings, and being around their parents, why. I used to see Brendan's dad all the time over at Towson, and then when I would go to Homewood, and the guy was amazing.
It's your game.
Man, great.
Is your dad from Baltimore, and did he play lacrosse?
No, he actually is from Flushing, New York. Grew up playing baseball, went to Bayside High. His claim to fame is that he played against Whitey Ford back in the day.
That's not bad.
He played semi-professional hockey. He was a goalie for the Rangers, club team back in the day. So he loved everything about sports, and he was a big time enthusiast. And I'll share one story with you, because I said this at his eulogy. He had this way of connecting with people, and Ronnie and I played for the Pittsburgh Bulls, and whatever year it was, we played in the old Spectrum, and I scored a goal, and at the Spectrum you can could hear everything. And all of a sudden, you hear this cheer coming from the rafters. Blank hole, blank hole. And either Ronnie or Petro looked over and like, hey, Butch, check out your old man. And he's standing there in front of his whole section going like this, you know, with his winter hat on. And he just loved lacrosse.
He loved a lot of our games.
You know, everybody we came in contact with, no different than my mom. You know, she was a lacrosse mom through and through.
So where are you in the pecking order with your brother? You have just two brothers?
So we have five. There are five of us total, and I'm one girl who's the oldest, and I'm second to youngest.
Did she play lacrosse at Towson as well?
She didn't, but she's an athlete in and of herself. She played basketball at Towson Catholic, was All-Metro Player of the Year her senior year.
Yeah.
Was going to go to Frostburg State to play basketball and ended up leaving home. She went to become a professional golfer.
No kidding.
Long story short, she made it on the tour a little bit. She played in a couple U.S. Opens, but ended up being the women's college golf coach at University of Georgia for 17 years. Made into the Women's College Golf Hall of Fame. So.
Where'd your brothers play in college? Did they play in college?
So Tommy didn't play. Tommy was dyslexic, and we didn't know that, or he didn't know that, you know, growing up. I mean, dyslexia was a big deal back in the day, and it's undiagnosed state.
Right.
So
it's terrible back then.
I know.
Here's
so
one right here in front of you.
Yeah, he went to fight for school, and then my oldest brother, who's adopted, was never really into athletics, and Brian obviously played at Towson High, won some state championships, and went on to Hopkins.
Well, I don't think there's anything cooler than playing with you. I have two brothers. Yeah. They're too old for me to ever been on the same team with. I can't imagine playing with them and scoring goals and getting a headline in the Baltimore Sun.
Oh, how great is that?
Does it get any better than that?
My mom has a great picture. Like, we played Delaney at Towson, and Delaney's trying to clear the ball. I intercepted like a pass from a defender right at the midfield line, and Tommy had kind of gone to play the goalie and got the pass and just ripped a pass to him. He scores, and I run and I like jump up into his legs, and my mom got this picture of like that moment right before we kind of caught each other.
Monumental.
And, you know, awesome. it was so cool. Yeah.
Who really has that picture now?
I don't know. You know, it's funny. I you know, because my mom and dad have passed, we have, each one of us have inherited or have gotten like boxes full of pictures.
Yeah,
and we're still going through them, but she has it. It's somewhere. So.
Well, I hope you find it. I'd like
could
to see
be
that
an
picture.
Encinitas out with TK.
Could be.
There's one thing I'd like to say about Brennan, and we've been teammates for many, many years playing club.
And did you play against Brendan?
I played against him
at Towson when he was a Hopkins. Okay.
Absolutely. And one of the things that probably a lot of people who played against him know, but he probably had the best poke check of any midfielder I have ever seen. And he would backpedal, and a guy would think he was running by him, and he'd just stop and jab it right into the middle of their chest. And I've never seen a midfielder drop, cause so many turnovers from that. I teach to this day to call it the Brendan Kelly poke check.
Nice.
And it's a backpedal with a poke. So if you got beat, you're still backpedaling.
Well, Coach Zim loved Riders, because he said it's a lost art, and he loved it. I know Coach Brock loved Riders as well. And, you know, for you to be an offensive star and a Rider, I think you're a two-way player. And we need more of you in today's game, I think. So.
Good.
All right. Well, that's it for the Kelly & Associates and Insurance Group and Kelly Payroll Heyday segment. Once again, thanks to Brendan Kelly for coming in and sharing with us some of his views on the game. Don't forget to visit www.kellyway.com to put their people, technology, and services to work for you. Now it's time for the Varsity Sports Network Top 10 Team segment. Fans of high school sports, and once again, there are thousands of us out there. If you want complete coverage of today's or yesterday's games and the most comprehensive coverage of all high school sports, visit www.varsitysportsnetwork.com. Once again, I go there every day, probably about five or six times, to check things out. VarsitySportsNetwork.com features everything: game coverage, feature articles, video highlights, and interviews, and has really the area's most comprehensive presentation of schedules, standings, and scores. So visit VarsitySportsNetwork.com often. So this week we're gonna we'll go through the top 10. And once again, after this is Wednesday, after yesterday's game, this is gonna change.
It's gonna change again.
Here we go. So I guess we can go through this because it really doesn't matter. It's already changed. So
why don't they just scrap the top 10?
I don't know why we're even doing this. It's crazy. So we should do the top 10 teams of the hour or something like that. Yeah. So coming in at 10, again, is Severna Park. And 9 is Hereford out in the Hereford zone, I guess. What is it? The HZ?
They've been blowing
people. The HZ?
They've been beating people up pretty good lately.
Yep, they beat Towson, they beat DeFore, and then they're beating everybody.
Sparrows Point 20-1.
They beat Pikesville 22-0. They got something going on.
I think they got a showdown coming up for the Baltimore County Championship with Towson here pretty soon. But they
Towson's
still
a little
through
delay. A little angry.
Yeah.
Number 8 is Gilman. Number 7 is Severn. They're gonna inch up. St. Paul's is number 6. St. Mary's is number 5. Calvert Hall is 4. Boys Latin is 3. They're gonna fall back. Loyola Blakefield is number 2, and the number 1 school right now is still the McDonough Eagles from last week. And we have some games this week that we're gonna on Friday. I guess McDonough will be playing John Carroll. So
John Carroll travels to McDonough.
Yep. And so I suspect they will win. Again, you never know. One of these days, John Carroll is going to come down and put it all together in one of these games.
They're going to surprise someone. I don't think it's going to be this year, but it's probably going to be a few years. Yep. But I think they need to, you know, Coach King is really creating a culture up there. He's doing a lot of nice things, but just like everything, it takes time. You know,
we watched, look
at the college level, Michigan, everyone said, wow, it's going to be a gold mine there. They're going to be fantastic quickly, and it's taken them a long time,
right.
And it's still taking them. They still haven't, you know, reached that pinnacle yet that to make the playoffs or, you know, even make the Big Ten playoffs. So it takes a while.
But there's no quitting that John Carroll team. You know,
Correct. They could
be down 4, 5, 10 goals, and they're still playing hard. And I think that's part of the culture you're talking about.
Absolutely.
To.
I'm sure you've had a lot of talent on some of your St. Paul's teams coming from up there in Hartford County. And now that they're in the A Conference, there's probably a good chance they're going to start holding on to these kids.
Yeah. I think a lot of our schools in the league that have been able to pick out of the Hartford County, you know, pocket and bed, I think, are going to really struggle a little bit getting kids there because Brian's created such a buzz up there to stay in Hartford County.
Yep.
And it's hard for those kids to drive 1 hour and 5 minutes, maybe even more in traffic, to come to a St. Paul's or a Boys Latin or a Loyola or Calvert Hall.
I still think it has a lot to do with the parents. From what I always see, and you know, when Dad went to St. Paul's, we want the son to go to St. Paul's. When Dad went to BL, they want the kid to be there. Calvert Hall. I see that with a lot of people. Maybe not even the best decisions for their own kids, but that's the history that they want.
I agree with you, but I think it has to do with the coaching. And I think if John Carroll now has A Conference quality coaches, which we know they do, you know, instead of going to Calvert Hall or St. Paul's or BL or Loyola, why don't you just stay in your own backyard?
Yeah.
We're playing A Conference quality teams,
and they're playing exciting brand of ball. BK loves to run up and down the field and play. You know, have his middies play both ways. It's an exciting brand of ball. It's fun to play that way for kids.
Right.
Well, I know they got some in the younger groups. You know, right in the middle school ranks right now, and that's where BK is really going to be able to keep those kids. And they are very, very talented. Those you know, 7th, 8th, 9th grade boys. If they again, they can keep them, they're going to start making waves.
And they got the Sherritts. He has the Sherritts brothers up there, both Doug and Bucky. Bucky in the younger levels, really building fundamentals teaching those kids how to play. And then Doug, you know, was a head coach, and he always told Brian that if they went back to the A Conference, he would come back to John Carroll and be an assistant. And there he is. Stay true to his word.
There's a heck of a player back in his day for sure. I think one of the teams, not a surprising team, because none of these teams surprised me, but I didn't think Loyola was going to sort of get to the top so fast. Boy, they're good.
They beat Gilman yesterday.
And they have Mount St. Joe. Is that at
Loyola?
At Loyola.
Friday.
So, Boy, I tell you,
they're playing with a lot of confidence right now. That's all you need. You play with confidence, and you have players. Good things are going to happen, and you see that day in and day out with that team. I don't think anybody really saw them as the team that's going to step it up this year.
A lot of factors going on with them, I think. You know, they have a strong offensive group. There's no doubt about it. Good senior leadership that's stepping up. Now they have a face-off kid, and you know, hey, they're playing hard for their coach who's going to be leaving there. You know, I think they're putting all that together. They really respect that man, and I think they listen to him, and those seniors have responded to him after they lost to Severn.
Yep.
It's interesting you say that, Rick, because, you know, I still have some connections to Ben and through a board that we sit on, a charitable board, and I mean, it takes a couple years, you know, to kind of get your fingerprints and your hands fully around what you're trying to create. And that's what I've seen Loyola play twice this year. And they're a different team than they were 4 years ago, for sure. So it's neat to see.
BL's got a really tough row to hoe. They lost to Severn yesterday. And they got to go right back down. We were just talking about Anne Arundel County. They got to go back down and play under the lights at St. Mary's on Friday night. That's going to be really tough.
What happened to Coach Farrell draw the short straw this year? He has to go back-to-back down to Anne Arundel County?
That is brutal. That is brutal.
And on a Friday night at St. Mary's, we were talking about that whole environment. It's going to be, that's going to be exciting. I'd love to go down there Friday night and check that game out.
You know, and if BL loses, they're going to be 4-4. And, you know, be honest, they're going to be in jeopardy of getting into the playoffs. They'll have to win their final two games for sure to probably get in there.
I think
they're
in sixth place right now.
They're holding
on to that sixth spot. I think there are three teams tied at 4-2.
Yeah. So, and then I think Loyola and Calvert Hall Loyola's at the top at 5-1, I believe. Okay, then Calvert Hall's got to entertain Severn. They had a tough, surprising game yesterday. I think Mount St. Joe went out to a 4-0 lead, I think it was, and then the Hall came back at 5-4 at halftime, and then it was just, you know,
back and forth.
Did you say the game is at Severn on that?
It's at Calvert Hall.
So that's an advantage, Calvert Hall.
And does Jacob come back and play this game?
And does Jacob play? I think that's the big question. Does Jacob come back and play? Jacob Kelly step back on the field and lead that team again? They need him desperately to do that.
Here's a game I'm really interested in, Brock, is St. Paul's at Gilman.
It's a playoff game. You know, Gilman is really fighting for their playoff life at 1-5 right now. You know, they essentially have to run the table. If you ask me, with John Carroll jumping in right now into the league, you have to win 5 to get in the playoffs. There's no doubt about it. So that's what you got to shoot for first, you know. So Gilman really has their back up against the wall. St. Paul's has put themselves in a pretty good spot, but they have Gilman, St. Mary's, Calvert Hall, and Boys Latin as their last four rows.
Talk about the short end of the stick.
Murderers, right there.
And you're going to have a lot of angry teams that are trying to, fight.
So the Crusaders want to win this one, but Gilman needs to win it too, and it's over there on grass, Family Day. You know,
is that Saturday?
Saturday at 2:00. It's going to be a battle.
It's going to be fun.
Supposed to go to Philadelphia that night with my wife, but I told her, hey, we're not going up till after this game. I'll be there.
Make sure your wife doesn't listen to this week's episode until after this weekend.
She knows.
and then I think here's a game that that Brendan and Brock will be very interested in. It looks like Hereford is playing Delaney at the U.S. Lacrosse Complex, and that looks like it's on Friday?
It is.
Yeah, Friday. That's going to be fun.
That is such a cool venue. I think what they've done, Steve Stenerson and U.S. Lacrosse have done there to have, and then to bring in these college and high school teams, both boys and girls, it's really exciting. So that'll be a great venue for them. It's a great stadium to sit
and
watch.
Yeah, it really is. Question for you. So when the season starts, I know you want to win every game, but how do you tell the kids that the mindset is, we want to get into the playoffs? Because anything can happen once you get in, right?
That's the first goal. You do what it takes to get in the playoffs, right? And you get to that second season. Sure, you want to win every game. There's no doubt about it. But you got to focus on, you know, the prize at hand. And the prize at hand is, first, you got to get into the playoffs. Because if you don't get into the playoffs, you can't play for the gold.
Brendan, how does it work in the county? Does it just Baltimore County, the best record, and then you go on to the states? Or
today, there's a county championship So for Baltimore County, it doesn't matter what class
what
the school is in.
School. Yep.
From there, you kind of go within your respective class. And it's interesting because Hereford has been reclassed this year. You know, they've had some epic battles the last several years with Kent Island. So Lindsay Dixon, that group down there, and they've won a couple of state championships. So Hereford this year, at least, you know, from what I have several parents that I talk to up there, and they feel like they have a really good shot with the reclassification. It's just having a good kind of clear path to the championship game. Now, who they play in that game is remains to be seen, obviously. But, yeah, but it's set up that way. So
County championship. So Towson and Delaney will vie against each other at some point at the end of the season?
No, probably not.
Oh, my gosh.
Unless Delaney does something to get into the driver's seat for the county Baltimore County championship game.
Okay.
So if Hereford wins that game, it looks like Towson and Hereford will
be
match
in the finals.
Up
yep.
yet again.
And when you look at the stats, two of those two teams, they're head and shoulders scoring more goals than the other teams in that conference, and they're also defending the net better than anyone else in that conference. So I think they have something like in the 130 goals scored in conference, and they're letting up only 40. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is a little bit more. Yeah,
they're
blowing people away.
Yeah.
And, you know, so you do see, though, you know, Delaney does have a lot of history. This year it looks like it's going to be a Hereford-Towson, again, I guess a second game.
For the counties.
Towson will have to go back up to the HZ and play it at night.
Yeah.
And they got to learn to win.
I mean, that's another, like, great venue. The cowbells and it's pretty cool.
And we were talking about their fans, Butch.
Yeah. Yes.
The Hereford fans are great.
They're passionate.
Yep. They really are. They're classy. They root for their team. There's nothing negative coming out of their mouths.
They
do it well.
Really wonderful people. Well, there you have the Varsity Sports Network top 10 teams and the games to watch this week. Once again, visit varsitysportsnetwork.com often. And once again, we want to thank Brendan Kelly for coming in and sharing, giving us a little over an hour to talk about high school lacrosse. Thanks, Brendan.
Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, Butch.
Great.
Thanks, Brendan.
We'll see everybody next week.